Ryan Stanton here with ASEP Frontline. Today, joined by Dr. Tracy Sanson, and as part of our ASEP 22, wrapping up 22, you're going to hear this one in 23 at the beginning, follow up on some of the conversations and lectures and discussions from there, and this one especially, because I can't think of many areas of emergency medicine that had more potential shift and questions as with locum tenens. And I think the last conversation that I had in terms of a podcast was from 2019 ASEP, where we're talking about, you know, the significant opportunities, travel, pretty much a peak in the market or a high in the market at that point, and really kind of see where we are. Because I've seen a lot of people online talking about going in, doing some travel, doing some locums-related activities, and really wondering what the conditions are. And that's what we got today. We're going to talk about some of those conditions and some of the things that you need to consider with regard to locums. So let's start off, Dr. Sanson. Give us a little background on yourself and let the audience know about you a little bit.
Well, thank you, Ryan. Great to talk to you, and thanks, ASEP, for the invite. I've had a fairly varied career in emergency medicine, and the last probably about 10 years have been all independent contractor and locums. I started off with a trained at the University of Illinois program in Chicago, and then had a military payback. So I was down in San Antonio at the Joint Military Medical Center down there as faculty. Then I moved to Tampa, Florida, and worked as associate medical director, medical director at various size EDs, and then began working with the University of South Florida Emergency Medicine Program, which was brand new at that time, as education director. And then, life events happen, and both my parents were quite ill. And so I left academics and started working down in Southern Illinois at small critical access hospitals, small community hospitals, and then a couple community hospitals around Florida. Was able through that to hospice my parents out of life, as well as still be back home with my, at that time, teenage and then college age daughters, and have really fallen in love with the incredible independence and freedom that being an independent contractor locums gives you. And so that's where my career has persisted. And then ASEP asked me to talk about it, and you hit it right there, Ryan, when you said things have been really changing in locums. When I first began talking about it, you know, I would lay out what's really fascinating about it is you can go into it for a bunch of different reasons. You want to know if you want to move to that area. Should you move to, you know, the West Coast if you grew up on the East Coast? Do you want to go work someplace where you can play? Are you a skier, or do you like to dive? Or for me, did you have family members in that area? The other thing that was fascinating to watch was I started out in a large military academic center. I trained at a large academic center. I then did community hospitals, and then again was in academics at a large facility with trauma, you know, a tertiary care center, et cetera. And then started going back out into smaller community and then critical access. And so you begin to see the breadth of what we do in emergency medicine. And so if you don't know, should I try academics or should I try a large center or vice versa? Could I handle a small critical access center where it takes forever to transfer or I'm the only physician for miles, sometimes hours? You can try out all these different things without having moved your whole family there or sold your home and moved there. You also find that people use it to perfect their skills. Maybe they've been in community or smaller academic and they now want to go and do more trauma or vice versa. So there's a lot of different reasons that people will do it. I find the most frequent is trying out a different location, trying to decide if that's the kind of hospital or group you want to go work with. And then all the other things kind of come in and out of that. So when I first started talking about it, it was really based on your choice, locums, you could decide if you wanted to go there for location or for skills or to try out the area. And then COVID hit. And when COVID hit, and we saw about a, you know, most places saw at least a 40% decrease in their patient volume, then the administrators, management leadership started really pulling in tightly of their coverage. And I think culled is a good word for it, started culling the physician workforce. And, you know, you had people that had worked at places for 15, 20 years who were just let go. And so they were also now looking for work, as well as the need was less. And we saw not only the opportunity, but the pay for locums go down dramatically.
And that's interesting. And you mentioned that because with COVID, you know, it was just the opposite. The nursing side exploded with the opportunity for travel and their pay went right up. It's almost like it shifted from the physician side with the need that was there. And I do find it very interesting that you mentioned the testing it out, because that's actually an angle that I don't recall that we've actually talked about before, of testing it out an area, because that is huge. Because I've seen physicians that have moved their entire family and found out that a city or a place wasn't a great fit for them, and ended up moving again within a year or two. And of course, the stress associated with it, you know, for me, thinking down the road, you know, I'm in a wonderful group right now. Who knows how long, you know, that will last as a small single hospital, private physician owned group, hopefully forever. But, you know, there it may not be. And thinking about with having 20 something state licenses through motorsports, you know, of saying, I want to spend this part of the year in, you know, in Florida down there or out in Utah skiing or wherever it may be, you know, that opportunity to go out there and do some work. So I think that is very interesting considerations. But, you know, getting back to COVID, because I think that's the huge topic of this particular episode is going to be COVID because of that change. So let's dive a little bit more into this quantum shift of this was huge opportunities for physicians. Now that's getting pulled back, even a scarcity, pay dropping off, and that shifting to the nursing side. So let's dive a little bit further into that COVID.
Those of us as independent contractors or locums, I thought the same was going to happen. When all of a sudden they were desperate for someone to come work at certain facilities that were absolutely overloaded, say, you know, the New York area, the physician pay did not follow the nurses at all. I think you could go through, I could surmise, we all talked about, but I think a lot of it is the kind of expectation that we've always had of physicians will suck it up and just go do it. But the pay did not. There were some folks who came up with really unique ideas, becoming, say, criticalists or intensivists, the emergency physicians who were fantastic at doing procedures, who kind of went in and said, well, this is what we'll do during this COVID time. We'll be the intubators, we'll be the bolster up the ICU needs that were at that time. They seemed to do well, but those who were in the ED and watched the volume shrink lost their jobs. And so what then happened was not only were there not jobs, and then what happens is you have no buyer's market, right? And the pay for locums plummeted. Now that only lasted about a year or so before the numbers started to climb, and we're where we are again now. The two things have happened though. We do see that the volume is back up, and I am getting emails and calls daily asking for people to come work. And the pay has risen, probably not back to where it was pre-COVID, but has risen markedly from the lower level that was there at COVID time. What we did see, though, that a lot of these facilities who drew down and let their physicians go, they have backfilled with non-physician providers. So there, we did not get exactly back to where we were needing physicians.
And that's a big concern, you know, and I think, you know, one of our big pushes is that a non-physician provider is in no way a replacement for a physician. You know, there may be an acuity and a volume discussion, but, you know, for the most part, that is, and that's my concern now, is that we are seeing that some hospitals are putting the cost over quality, and they're putting that cost over the patient outcomes and care. I mean, insurance would probably prefer people not to survive because they'd save more money that way. And so, you know, for me, it's one of those things that we have seen that demand start to go up, and we've seen the attrition as well. You know, we've seen the attrition with physicians that just either cut back some of their shifts just going through COVID. You know, initially we were heroes, and then all of a sudden you've got just everybody who just thinks you're some sort of villain and that you were the one that opened the window of the lab in China and let it out kind of ideas of the making the physicians and healthcare and medicine into the villain. I think people are kind of cutting back, and not only that, but retiring early or even potentially having complications from getting COVID. So kind of look at that list as we go now. You mentioned the increased growth. Just as you are, I'm getting calls every single day for opportunities within states that have licenses, even within, you know, downtown areas, larger community facilities like in Lexington, where there are opportunities to come not only as locums, but also as, you know, potentially as more long term. So as this attrition, let's actually kind of shift the gears a little bit, because one thing that came out during COVID as well was the workforce report that said, hey, we're not going to have enough jobs. And so then you see this giant cutback with COVID, the numbers, the value in terms of the payment, reimbursement, cuts drop with locum tenens. Has the workforce, the concern for potential enough positions, has that impacted? Or are we seeing just the opposite? Because me personally, I kind of feel like that we're seeing just the opposite, and kind of feel like that workforce report is going to miss the mark quite a bit.
I think the workforce report was off. I think there were enough confounding factors that came in at different times there. But what I've read in the workforce, it does not match what I am seeing or that have experienced with friends. I do have quite a few friends. I'm in Florida, stationed based in Florida. We had two things that occurred. One was a significant growth in emergency medicine residency programs over the last probably 10 years, going from a handful, maybe seven or so, I don't remember the exact number, to up, we're in the 17, 18 or more now. So if you have 18 or so residency programs graduating 10 or more a year, you can see where the marketplace becomes quite saturated. Because people tend to stay where they have trained. What I find interesting, though, is even as the numbers have gone up, I am receiving from Florida area, sometimes recruiters with 15 or more programs that need to, or hospitals that need sites to be filled. So it's not matching. I will tell you that my cohort, I'm a little older than you, more mature than you in emergency medicine, are starting to cut back and or retire, or are really taking on more novel roles in emergency medicine. And I think that is one thing I took from the workforce study, was that a broadening our idea of what an emergency physician does or can do. Telehealth has been a significant one, as well as palliative care, a lot of international work, wilderness work, toxicology, all those other things. And so I do, because I've cast a wide net now with my own career, I've been doing some work recently in Ukraine and Poland and telehealth, and then as well as independent contracting in various EDs, that I'm getting an onslaught of the various opportunities that are out there. And I think that's one thing we can take from this in emergency medicine right now, is to broaden the idea of, and I don't mean just in the pejorative way, but just as a clinician in the emergency department as what we do in emergency medicine. There's so many other things. Some great friends, personal great friends who are doing work in public health or in policy and things like that as well.
And that's exactly my story. It's the fact I'm working half of what I did when I first started in emergency medicine. Of course, I was working 16, 18, 20 shifts a month when I first started coming out of residency, half of that now, but now mainly in EMS and motorsports, traveling around the country with motorsports. And so, you know, the idea that we're going to have a 3% annual attrition rate, suggesting that each physician is going to work full time for 33.33 years, is that's pretty the pie in the sky view, because, you know, I don't know any physicians that are working the same amount shift wise that they were when they first came out of residency. Just because you come out of residency, you're finally getting a decent paycheck, you finally get to get a decent house, get a decent car, start putting away for retirement and all those types of things, and then all of a sudden you discover, I don't want to spend 18, 20 shifts a month in the emergency department. You know, maybe 10, maybe 12.
In my case, 8.
Well, what is full time anymore? There's a, on one of the ASAP listservs I'm on right now, there's a discussion going back and forth on full time. When I trained, it was 2,000 hours. You know, 50 hours, 50 weeks at 40 hours a week, 2,000 hours is what you came out somewhat expecting. And the numbers that were being bantered back and forth right now are about 1,500, 1,300. One group was saying we have 1,000 as what we consider full-time. So I think that's one of the factors as well. I personally lost 9 colleagues, friends, or family through COVID. If that doesn't reset for you how many hours we should be working or sacrificing to a facility that will let you go in a moment's notice, that doesn't protect you from violence, that doesn't even have a cafeteria open at night, you know, those types of things. I think it's reset for a lot of us, that emergency medicine mindset of being there 7 days a week, 24 hours a day, slogging through everything to try and help a group or a hospital, or sometimes even a patient that does not reciprocate. So those are a lot of the mind shift changes that have occurred.
And we're seeing that too with, in consideration, not necessarily with the group I've got now, but the group I was in prior to this one, so over a decade ago now. You know, you'd have docs that it was fantastic. They would come in and want to work a ton of shifts, 18, 20, more than 20. Had one that was doing like 24 shifts a month. And then you realize you've got all your eggs in one basket. If something happens to that person, and I think COVID really, as you mentioned, reset that. That said, we can't guarantee 100% that doc's going to be here. They may want to be here, but they may get sick. They may get injured. They may have a life event. They may have something that happens. And now I'm trying to replace 2 FTEs as opposed to 1 FTE. And you know, there is a point where, as leadership of a group, you have to say, you know, maybe we need to make sure that we don't have too much riding on this one physician arriving every day for the next year or whatever. Maybe pulling back and where are the guardrails to say, this is, we want you to be motivated, want you to do this, but also we need to make sure that we're ready if something unforeseen were to happen. I mean, you mentioned the 9 that you've had that were lost. You know, we've got a number of close friends through and emergency physicians through ASAP that we've lost, some that have never been able to work again, some that are working but requiring supplemental oxygen, that have some limitation in some of the functions, you know, and that's a challenge to see. And I think COVID did refocus to say, you know, it isn't all about as a physician, because I do believe I did an interview just a couple of weeks ago where they were talking about emergency physicians showing up and, you know, staff shortages. And I'm like, you know, physicians, we never really had a challenge with getting the physicians to show up when they're scheduled. You're either working or you're a patient. And if not, you've got somebody else there for you. In most cases, the vast majority of cases. And, you know, I think that at one point that COVID has allowed us to potentially look in the mirror and say, wait a second, you know, I've spent my entire life for the system, whether it's medicine, does kind of the global medicine side for my employer, when that may not necessarily, as you mentioned, be reciprocated with protections, rights, security, nutrition, which is always a big issue during that during holiday seasons. So, you know, I think it is a chance to look in the mirror and say, you know what, at some point I need to take care of myself, because we do have a shorter life expectancy than most other physicians just because of the shift-related work. And so it may be a chance that we reflect and say, how do we do this moving forward? And so I do think that there's going to be plenty of opportunities, not only as physicians, not only as emergency physicians, to do things outside of traditional brick and mortar emergency medicine, but also that increased risk, increased need, demand for folks like yourself and others within the locum tenens community to fill in spaces and gaps and to do exactly what you talked about. So let's kind of roll into, where do you see us evolving from now with locum tenens, not only in emergency medicine, but to potentially locums opportunities outside the brick and mortar with the opportunity to help and support and fill in gaps where highly trained emergency physicians are needed.
So I'll talk to that in one second. I wanted a thought that when you were talking about these other ones, another place that COVID impacted the ability to schedule was most of us banked on having reliable childcare, reliable school schedules so that you could say, I am working on this day. And when schools started closing down, or as we've seen the really significant intermittent illnesses that children have always had, but more recently have really pulled them back out of school, or in some places taken the whole family down as they pass virus from virus to virus, is that it became very difficult, not just for women, but anyone who was a parent who now was faced with, how do I take care of people now that are at home as well as get to my shift? And so one of the places that I'm working where I'm PRN, I have been filling in a fair amount with those kind of real quick phone calls because I have the independence and the freedom right now of, listen, I can you take my shift 3 days from now? And I think that's what locums gives you, is that kind of flexibility of people who either, like yourself, or if you're in, say, telehealth and you have multiple licenses, where you have that flexibility to come in more short term, as opposed to if now a hospital decides they want to wrap up, it's to get somebody in and credentialed and on your staff is a 3 month or more process. Whereas if you have the locums or those who are independent with the flexibility, who are credentialed at several sites, and or have licenses at more sites, I think we can more flexibly respond to the life events that emergency physicians go through. Some of them are COVID driven at the moment. You're right. Some of them are medically related at the moment. But I have filled in for folks who are like, I just need to be with my dad in the last week of his life. And then I need a week for the funeral and then maybe some time to decompress afterwards. If you had tried to do that to a regular group and say all of a sudden, I need 3 to 4 weeks, you would put a lot of pressure on your colleagues. Whereas if you have somebody who has the flexibility to come in and out, which is what locums do, then I think it helps us have a kinder, gentler response to life events for our fellow emergency physicians.
Completely agree. And actually just had me thinking there, because we're opening up a freestanding ED as part of our hospital system next year, thinking, you know, potentially filling in, building up, you know, how you make that happen with building up with locums as you build and basically double the size of a group overnight, which won't be an issue for us, you know, just being one of the only remaining private, you know, private group in Lexington, you know, but that build up, that transition is going to be challenging. You know, as we move into now 2023, theoretically post COVID, now it's just COVID and everything else. I think I've got like 7 or 8 viruses that we're seeing with frequency right now. Where do we see kind of the landscape going and the evolution of locum tenens as a practice option?
I think it's great right now. The need is there. Anybody who is on any recruiter's list right now is getting the onslaught of texts and phone calls and emails. So what I think that's important to recognize is, okay, we do have the market share back. That means we as physicians need to be more intentional about the salary we ask for, about the support that we get. You know, you can find a various, some places you are paid upfront for any of the expenses you're having to put out for travel, for food, for flights and things like that, renting cars. For others, you get paid in arrears and it can take weeks to months. I tell you, I have quite a few friends who were caught in the most recent travel woes, where they were trying to get to a facility that they were supposed to cover, and the you know, the flights are gone. That's one of the things with locums, is that I can't count how many times I picked up a car and drove 18 hours to get to a job that I had because the flights either canceled or there was some type of snafu like that. So I think we have to work on making sure we're paid well, that we have the security, that you have the support as far as keeping up a lot of the licenses and the credentialing and things like that that go into it. So for the independent contractor, the locums physician, I think now is the time to really solidify what you need. There's a couple things that are still out there. Some of the contracts are a mess when you go to look at them, like still having non-compete clauses in them. If I am looking to move to Tennessee right now, and I don't know if I'm going to pick up my family, if I go and pick up shifts with you to check out the area to see if I like either your group or area, do you have the schools? Do you have the kind of house? Do you have the after work activities I'd like to do? And then I decide to move there. I'm not taking your contract. I, as an individual, am deciding to go move to your area. I should have the ability to do that. Not that there was something buried in my contract that says I can't work in a certain geographical area for several years, or I have to buy out of the contract. There are some unscrupulous things that still occur. One of the things that I tell folks when I'm talking to them about locums is you will have a recruiter contact you and say, oh, we've got this great opportunity in Pensacola, Florida. Send me your CV. And so people just send their CV. Well, that CV then gets sent out to any of those facilities or facilities that are associated with it, because you are in a small contract group, but a lot of them are in a small Democratic group. A lot of them are in very large group with tentacles everywhere. And so if your CV gets presented, then you're theoretically out of that open market. And so I tell them, put across your CV a watermark that says, as of this date, December 29th, this is for a referral to this specific hospital in this specific city. Not then that you decide, well, I'm going to move to Pensacola, and you present yourself to an emergency department and they say, oh no, your locums company or somebody already presented to you to us, we can't take you on, which happens more often than you would like to know.
And
what I'll get is, because it happened to me very early in my career, and the angst of people are like, what do you mean? Nobody owns me, I didn't sign anything, but there is this, the facilities are not going to take somebody who's already been presented to them via the CV from a recruiter, because now they have really kind of messed with or broken the rules that occur between the facilities and the recruiters and the locum groups.
Oh man, that's a nugget right there, is to make sure that you protect your CV and information, because that is a pretty shady way of doing business. But understanding that those are businesses out there, and you know, that's, I think, one of the challenges as physicians is we often think that we're all working in the same direction and for the overall good to benefit each other, and that's not always the case. So that's a good tip to keep in mind, to watermark your CV, make sure it's specific for the one facility. And then thoughts on really finding, because there's a number of different, whether maybe that's how I put it, you know, looking at how do you best engage or find a company or outlet or connection point that is in the best interest of the physician?
So there's two ways to look at this. I think the first thing you have to do is know yourself. If you're fairly well organized and can keep track of all the things that need to be done, like one of the things I tell people right now is, I don't care if it's a file folder on your computer or if it's a flash drive, whatever it is, I want you to get all the information you will need to become credentialed. That's, you know, going back to your medical school diploma and your board scores if you need it, or a listing of any prior hospitals that you were credentialed at, the medical staff office, their phone number, their fax number, a contact person. The same is true of getting your diplomas and things like that from your medical school, is have all that information. Because you don't have to go through a locums company. If, for example, I wanted to move to Lexington right now, I could look you up in the ASEP database. I could give you a call and say, listen, I'm going to be in the area. I want to work 3 to 4 shifts. And then you have your own information to be able to sell yourself. I'm most comfortable at about 2, maybe 2.3 patients per hour. My patient satisfaction scores run at about this. This is what my RVUs have been historically. I don't have any major malpractice cases or one that was 25 years ago. I have my interactions with nursing and colleagues and hospital staff are X, whatever it may be, so that you can lay yourself out. And if you have the need, say you have somebody who's about to go on paternity leave or someone who just had bypass surgery and you need someone to come in, if I can then sell you myself and have all the credentialing material available right now, including what's the most important is 3 reliable friends who the day that they get a reference request for you will fill it out. Because that's what I find most often holds up credentialing, is that somebody's need to fill out a reference on you is sitting in their email box someplace. I could then negotiate directly with you as a medical director to come and work X amount of shifts in your facility for whatever the time frame is that you and I decide it needs to be. Or I could go to a locums company who will handle all that for me, all of the credentialing, all of the paperwork, making sure that it gets in, making sure that my references send in their materials, set up my being paid and that I get paid at X, whether it's 2 weeks or a month, whatever it may be. Recognize that when you use a locums company, they're going to take a chunk off of the top. And, you know, I don't know the specific numbers, but say the going rate right now is $300 an hour for you as a locums to come there. The company is going to take probably $40 to $50 off of the top of that. And whereas if I go in and I negotiate directly with you as a medical director, then I know exactly what level you're able to pay and what I'll be getting back. So a lot of it depends on what goes on in the area, your own comfort with making sure that with negotiating yourself and or being able to get all the materials in to get credentialed and up and going.
Let's wrap up. One, any closing thoughts that you may have, any other messaging that you feel may be important to our physicians and others out there, and then contact information, because I'm sure some, especially those coming out, may be interested in pursuing this a little bit more. And I'd much trust a fellow emergency physician communicating with another emergency physician on locums rather than working and dealing with a booth at a conference or whatever it may be. So both any closing thoughts and then contact info.
So closing thoughts I would tell you is if you had any past negative thoughts about what a locums was, dispel that. 15, 20 years ago, it was somebody who couldn't get a job somewhere else or was kind of nomadic. It's a great opportunity right now. It gives you freedom. It gives you flexibility. And you can choose why you're going. We talked about location or other activities. Know your worth. Know who you are. Go to a place based on where you work best, not on that dollars per hour. Do you work better in a community facility? Are you great at a trauma center? Are you really comfortable at 1.5 patients per hour? Or do you like to do 2+? What kind of support do you need as far as nursing? What kind of type of patients do you like to work with? Because life is really too short to be chasing only money. You want to be comfortable where you are. And then what I say is when you get there, be competent, have compassion, and have great character. If you need to be there on time, be there on time. If you're covering a group that's in dire straits right now and you're late or you're not showing up, then what do you really put them at risk. And then I would tell you is negotiate. Get out those things like no compete clauses. Make sure that it works out for what you need. We do at this moment seem to have the power in the negotiating. And then my contact is Tracy, T-R-A-C-Y, Sanson, S-A-N-S-O-N, at gmail.com.
Or it could be Dr. Sanson, if we're going to do it in French or Italian. It could be. We actually had that discussion prior to starting today. I'd like to, if we're going to have somebody on the podcast, I want to make sure I'm saying their name properly, even if it is relatively obvious. I really appreciate the time. I think that this is a fantastic consideration. I've always told, when I was working in the academic setting for residents looking at contracts, and I always told them, if they're paying you a lot more than what you would expect a normal emergency physician to make, they're going to take it out of you somewhere else, whether it's volume, whether it's setting, whether it's support, whether it's risk, whatever it may be. So I think that's one of the most important messages to emergency physicians, especially those coming out of residency, is don't chase the money, chase everything else. You know, whether it's the location, the setting, the environment, especially now that we're seeing kind of what's played out after COVID. You know, what's the environment in terms of support, staffing, throughput, administration is critically important. You know, the fact that I'm fortunate enough to be at a facility that they still get really worked up when there's boarding, when people are boarding more than about 12 to 18 hours. They forgive metrics if they've got significant boarding. So, you know, those are things to look at, is how are we looking to support and protect our physicians and other staff. But, you know, in our case, we're American College of Emergency Physicians. You know, that's going to be key things that we look at. And definitely see the opportunity down the road for me is, you know, currently having 23 state licenses, is maybe this is an opportunity once done with all of these types of things currently involved with, to travel around once my girls were off in college and things of that nature, to see different areas and still work and cover emergency medicine. So, but I really appreciate the time. Glad we're able to catch up, and I look forward to chatting in the future.
ASEP does have a locum section as well as an interest group. And there are several very active Facebook groups that discuss openly good groups, bad groups, things to watch out for. So I would really tell you that don't just go into, you know, answer the phone, send in your CV, and go to a place blindly. Call and ask how things are. Check with your colleagues who may know somebody that works there. Go through the Facebook groups and ask questions. Join the ASEP locums group. That way you are getting as much information as you can when you're negotiating, as well as knowing what to expect when you get to a facility or a locale that you may have never been to before.
It kind of rolls into the, we're great at medicine, we're specialists in emergency medicine, but doesn't mean we're not the experts at everything else. Just like with the idea of a contract, no matter what contract you're looking at, unless that is an expertise of yours, make sure you have a lawyer review it. In fact, we did that recently with our group, even with good intention, and things that they didn't realize were in there, and so had it reviewed and putting in due process and all those types of things. So make sure that, yes, absolutely, lean on others to get the information, because you don't want to end up in a difficult situation. I've ended up with bad contracts before and learned my lesson the wrong way. Well, one in particular. But, you know, making sure that you work with other physicians, talking with other physicians, whether it's the interest group, whether it's the section, whether it's those pages on social media, Facebook, in order to get that information, ask questions, get the details, realize and understand, learn from the traps and the pitfalls that other people have experienced so you don't have to do them yourself, because it is a great opportunity, but also could be a difficult situation as well if not done properly. And leaning on other emergency physicians is a fantastic way to do it, because if there's anybody I feel like has your back, it's going to be another batch of people in the same boat that you are as emergency physicians. As for me, you can contact me, rstant@asep.org, rstant@asep.org, or at EverydayMed on Twitter. And until next time, I'm Dr. Ryan Stanton, and this has been some ASEP Frontline.
If you're not on the front lines, you're on the sidelines.